Hello and welcome to Interesting Times, found on the web at http://www.xmail.net/interestingtimes/. This segment focuses on a 1971 lecture by Dr. Stuart Crane titled Wheat Receipts, an examination of the International Monetary Fund and the history of international banking. Recorded in 1971 outside Los Angeles, California, features a man named Stuart Crane explaining the International Monetary Fund, its dynamics, and its history. If you've ever wondered why economic depressions and recessions, the boom and bust business cycle, wars, and the consolidation of international financial power occur, you're in for a treat because Dr. Crane lays it out clearly and simply. In this, the first of two parts, Dr. Crane focuses specifically on the principles behind the practices of the International Monetary Fund common to central banks, including the Federal Reserve System.
This recording was made in 1971 near Los Angeles, California. As we begin the program, Dr. Crane is being introduced to the audience.
We are delighted to have Dr. Stuart Crane with us for the Americanism class this afternoon. Dr. Crane, for those of you who may not know, is the Dean of the School of Business at Bob Jones University in Greenville, South Carolina. He has completed his first year there, but while he serves in that capacity, he reserves every weekend to go out and do battle with the God of this world, who is the devil, and resist communism in every way he possibly can. It's my privilege to meet Dr. Crane personally, just briefly at the banquet last summer at the Disneyland Hotel, and then more fully at Bob Jones University this past fall. He was very gracious and flew me down to Atlanta in his airplane so that I could catch a flight back to Los Angeles in time for our Christmas program, I believe, which was taking place at that time. And it's a real joy to have Dr. Crane with us. He brought a tremendous message during the baccalaureate service, and we are very anxious to hear what he has to say this hour and then at 7 o'clock. Dr. Crane, the Lord bless you.
Right. I'm going to, because this is a class, if you'll permit me to do a little teaching, and I'm going to take a little different approach than often taken. Let me start out by trying to explain what a banking system is. And we'll do this as an economics class if we can, and explain how banks operate. The other day I was talking to a vice president of one of the large banks of California, and he said he asked the president of his bank to explain to him the International Monetary Fund, because he did. The president says, I can't figure it out either. Now, he says, is it something when the president of a very large bank can't explain the International Monetary Fund? In fact, it was very difficult to find out what the International Monetary Fund's all about. And if you ever got a textbook on it, it's full of gobbledygook you can't figure out anyway. The textbooks kind of run over with a bunch of platitudes, but things seem to be quite mysterious about banking and Federal Reserve and what happens to money and depression and inflation and all these other sorts of things. Let me explain it this way, if you will let me. I am a grain elevator operator. That is, I have an elevator and people store grain in my elevator. Now this man comes, he puts 100,000 bushels of wheat in my elevator. What does he want from me? He wants me to give him a receipt so he can show that he owns 100,000 bushels of wheat in my elevator, doesn't he? So I issue him a wheat receipt. Receipt, 100,000 bushels. And this man puts in 20,000, 10,000, 15,000, 18,000. Each different people put out grain in my elevator. Some people, they take out an elevator, but they store grain there. Now, what do I find? What happens is that he finds out that he can go out and take his elevator receipt, his wheat receipt, and he can buy things with it. He can exchange it for things, or he can sell it on the market. They do that in the grain pit, don't they, in the grain market. They buy and sell what? Wheat? No, they buy and sell receipts for wheat, don't they? Now, that's a grain market. Now, I run my elevator, and I notice something about my elevator. People bring wheat, take out wheat. Sometimes I have a million bushels. Sometimes I have 800,000 bushels. Sometimes I have 600,000 bushels. But I never have less than 300,000 bushels. People are bringing and selling it and coming and going all the time. But there's always 300,000 bushels. That's the minimum ever in my elevator. One day I want to build a little tight. If a wife needs a new fur coat or something like this, and I'm going to go down to the bank and borrow and pay interest on it. I say, wait a minute. I don't need to really pay interest. I could do something else. What if I would write up a receipt for 10,000 bushels of wheat and sell the receipt? Now, if the person wanted the wheat, I got 300,000 bushels. They wouldn't know the difference. One wheat looks like any other wheat, doesn't it? So I sell it, and later I'll buy the 10,000 bushels back when I have the money, buy the receipt back for 10,000 bushels, tear it up, and we'll all be even. And I won't have to pay any interest. Isn't that smart? Sure. So I issue such a receipt. I write one, I go out and sell it. Now, what happens? I never really have to buy that receipt back because I never down to 10,000 bushels. Now, pretty soon, the wife wants to live in a little bigger house. Well, I write another little receipt for another 20,000 bushels a week. Then I write another little receipt for another thing. Pretty soon, the church needs a little money, so I give them 5,000 bushels a week receipt. Go out and sell. And I'm a big shot. The mayor has me on the council and the commission. I'm on all the boards. Everybody knows that I'm a successful businessman. I got the biggest car in town. My children are looked up to. The family's looked up to. We have a respectable, dignified name. Right? I am a successful businessman. And everybody looks to me as one of the finest. I give money to the charity, little kids, the candies for the school program, and the whole works, right? I am Mr. Knight. Back in my office, when I closed the door, I sit there and I worry. Why? Some months, because I've written so many receipts now, I've only got 4,000 and 5,000 bushels of wheat in the back room, and there's $200,000 and $300,000, $400,000 bushels of receipts going around. And if too many people come in and ask for their receipts at once, people will find out I'm a cheat. I'm real worried. Sure, I'm a big shock to the world. You know, we can all kid the world, can't we? But back in that back room, we sit there and we're biting our nails. What happens if they ask for more wheat than I got? I get real worried. Bright idea. I go down the track and I see old Joe. Joe runs a wheat elevator down there, and I say, "Say, Joe, you and I are in trouble." "What do you mean we're in trouble?" "I'm a successful businessman. Look, Joe, you're doing the same thing I'm doing. You've written more wheat receipts than there are wheat." "I wouldn't do a thing." "I love Joe. Don't kid me. I look, we're in trouble." "Yeah, we sure are." Now, if people find out I've written wheat receipts without wheat, they're going to suspect you. And if everybody comes in after their wheat, you can't back your wheat receipts any better than I can back mine. If they catch you, they're going to come after me. You know who the dirty people are? The people who would run on us and ask for their wheat. Those are the bad people. Now, look what would happen. Look, Joe, if they come and ask for their wheat and we can't get the wheat, all those people who hold those wheat receipts will lose out. Sure, we'll be ruined, but they'll be ruined too, wouldn't they? They bought a wheat receipt and bought it in full faith, and they're going to find out that wheat receipt's no good, and it'll be disastrous. Everybody will lose. It'd be terrible for everybody, wouldn't it? Therefore, it is our civic duty to see that they don't find out we wrote phony wheat receipts. You see, as long as they don't know they're phony, they're just as good as real wheat receipts. People buy and sell them and think they're worth value, and as long as they think they're worth value, what difference does it make? Now, that's man rationalizing, isn't it? Huh? Okay. Well, yeah, that's all right. Let's do it. Look, there's only one way out of this. Let's hold a little convention of all the wheat elevator operators in our valley, and we're going to get them all together. So we get them together, and I stand up there and I say, "Now, gentlemen, we've all been writing some phony wheat receipts." "Oh, no, none of us." Look. Let's get out all of the holier-now bit and get down to practical problems. "Now, we've all been writing these wheat receipts. I know there's a lot more wheat receipts wrapping around than there is wheat. And every one of you are in business because you've been doing the same thing I'm doing, because if you weren't doing it, I would have beaten you out long ago. The only way you survived is the same way I survived, writing wheat receipts for the wheat that isn't there. Now, you know how terrible it would be if the people found out we've been writing bad wheat receipts. That would be wipe out thousands of innocent people who hold our wheat receipts right now. We've got to protect those innocent people from finding out we're cheats. Now, let us face facts. We can't buy the wheat receipts back. We can't make it straight. Even if we wanted to, we simply haven't got it. We spent it. See, we can't buy it back. The only practical thing to do is keep them from finding out the wheat receipts are no good. Now, what we're going to have to do is we are going to each put 50,000 bushels of wheat into one central elevator so that if anybody gets too low, he can come and draw the wheat and cover his wheat receipt so nobody finds out that he's cheating. That's called our Community Wheat Insurance Corporation. All right? Now, we're going to have to do another little thing, see? Some of you people with this nice new insurance corporation, which will guarantee that you are not going to have to be in default, will think that you're so protected you will cheat by writing even more receipts. What we're going to do is make an agreement amongst us that we will work, pull together and elect a trust that is our representatives to a super organization which will control how many phony wheat receipts we write so that we all cheat equally. Otherwise, some of you will cheat more than others. And we're also going to have to stabilize the price of wheat receipts so that those people who cheat less than others, the wheat receipts don't go for different values in the market, which would show some of us not. In other words, we're going to have... Now, look, how can we do this? I know some of you guys are going to cheat because you're as dirty guys as I am, see? I know just what you're like. Yes, you are. Now, what we're going to do... See, Bill over here... Bill is looking for a job. Now, if we elected Bill governor, Bill promises to pass a law saying that we can set up a monopoly control trust to guarantee that we'll regulate wheat receipt writing and that all wheat receipt writings will have to be official wheat receipts and wheat receipts will have to be accepted by people as real wheat receipts whether they are or not. Legal wheat receipts. Legal tender wheat receipts. We are going to force people to have to accept them as real wheat receipts whether they are or not. They can't question the wheat receipt anymore. And they got to recognize our monopoly on wheat receipt writing so new phony people can't come in and write wheat receipts and pass them like they're our wheat receipts. Not only that, he promised to pass a law that anybody who makes a copy of our phony wheat receipts will go to jail as a counterfeiter. He's counterfeiting wheat receipts, isn't he? Only the members of our monopoly association can write phony wheat receipts. This is for the good of the people, because if there are too many phony wheat receipts around, people get suspicious. We've got to keep new wheat receipt writers out of the business. And the second thing is, we've got to make sure that people cannot call for the wheat receipts. So after a few years, this goes along, and people get used to this sort of thing. And of course, remember, who are the bad people in bank runs? Why, the people who come in and ask for their money back. The people who run on a bank are the people who are bad, aren't they? They are causing lack of faith. Our textbooks tell us the bad people are the people who ask for their money that they deposited in good faith, aren't they? Because they cause bank crashes that hurt everybody. Why? The bank can't pay. Why? They don't have it. Why? That's interesting, isn't it? Well, let's go back and now take a look at something else. After a few years, people get used to these nice new official-looking wheat receipts. They can't get wheat for it. We pass a law now. Look, what would happen if people in general asked wheat receipts from everybody? Sure, we can have the central wheat pool. We transfer wheat back and forth to keep any one person getting caught. What if everybody would ask for wheat receipts or a lot of people in many banks at once? We might not be able to deliver enough wheat receipts. What are we going to do? Old Joe is still up there. It only costs us 0.5% in order, each of us, to finance a good election campaign to make sure the right guy is making the right law. So we have to make a new law. It is illegal for people to have wheat for the wheat receipts. Now, there are wheat receipts, and there's wheat there, but you can't have any wheat. It's illegal for anybody to hold wheat unless they are a member of the association. Now, members of our association can hold wheat, but nobody else can have it. You understand that?
That is to keep these awful people from asking for more wheat than there is. How could they ask for more wheat than there is if we had wheat behind every wheat receipt? Well, they couldn't. But what if there are more wheat receipts than there's wheat? That's the only way you could ever be a run on wheat receipts, right? And so to protect against a run, we got to make sure that people can't have wheat. But now we've got to be honorable about this thing. We've got to give wheat to other members of the association. You see, you're going to have to pay off to club members in real wheat. But you don't pay off to non-club members. They can't own wheat. Only the licensed members of the association, right? Call the Federal Wheat Reserve Board. Oh, what a classic that is. Of course, we do this to stabilize wheat receipts to protect everybody from unstable wheat markets. Isn't that right? Sure. Well, after a few years, people get used to not getting wheat for their wheat receipts. We'll make a new deal. 1968. We won't be required to have any wheat behind our wheat receipts. We'll say that a wheat receipt is the same thing as wheat, and there is no need to have wheat anymore. We can take all the wheat, and what you can get for a wheat receipt, we guarantee to redeem every wheat receipt with another wheat receipt. That's like going into a parking lot. You take in your parking ticket. You know, you put your ticket. They give you a ticket for your parked car, and you go in and you say, "I want my car. My car is number so and so on thing." And they say, "Oh, sorry, we sold your car, but we'd be happy to give you another receipt. Now you can have a blue parking ticket or a green parking ticket. What color ticket do you want?" "Oh, I want my car back." "Oh no, we sold your car. Now look, if you have a Chevrolet car, we'll give you a Buick parking ticket. How's that?" Or you go down to the Green Stamp Redemption Center, and they tell you, for your green stamps, we'll give you a nice new book of green stamps for your old book of green stamps. You say, "Well, I would like a prize." "Well, sorry, we are giving prizes, but we will redeem your green stamps in green stamps." Isn't that nice? Well, while we got this little club going, we have a problem. We've got to make sure that people in other associations and other valleys, in order for our wheat receipts still to appear good. When people in other associations and other valleys, we promise to give them wheat for our wheat receipts that they hold, because they got their club. If they'll give us wheat for their wheat receipts that we hold. In other words, amongst other monopoly clubs, we will give wheat and redeem. But we will not do it to people in our own club area who aren't members of the association. Well, there's a problem. People outside of our club area, some people get those wheat receipts and they keep demanding wheat. And our wheat gets lower and lower and lower. So we now go to a dual market. Other monopoly club members can get wheat, but no one else can get any wheat, whether they're in our club area or anywhere else. There's still a problem left involved. What is that problem? Some of the other monopoly wheat areas keep giving wheat for their receipts and show up our wheat receipts, which won't exchange the same value. People prefer their wheat receipts over ours. Those are bad people. They're upsetting the inter-community wheat market. There are other people who, valleys which have their monopoly association, which will not redeem their wheat receipts even for us when we hold them. That is, they have soft wheat receipts. They won't redeem it to the monopoly association. How are you going to have to get rid of that? We're going to have to merge all the monopolies into one monopoly and have one worldwide wheat association reserve board called the International Wheat Fund. Right? Then all wheat receipts will be equally phony. And the wheat market will be now stabilized, and there can be no run anywhere. The only way to have ultimate assurance and protection is to have a wheat, world wheat monopoly control board. Now, I hope you understand what the International Monetary Fund is all about. What it is simply all about is they stole your money. Now, you see, I got a piece of paper here. It isn't even printed by the United States. It isn't an American note. It isn't a dollar, a United States dollar. It is a Federal Reserve note. Notice, the Federal Reserve is not owned by the United States government. It is a privately owned bank. The private bank, Princess Money, up in Minnesota here last year, a man was arrested for drawing pictures just like these pictures. They brought him into court and called him a counterfeiter. He was found not guilty when he proved that he was willing to redeem his pieces of paper for exactly what the Federal Reserve was willing to redeem their pieces of paper. Now, he says, if I gave less than the Federal Reserve, I would be writing a phony claim. See, the Federal Reserve promises to give nothing. Theirs is a claim on nothing, and mine's a claim on nothing. I am doing no different than the Federal Reserve is doing. He was acquitted. See, fraud is to write a claim on something that is bogus. He didn't write a claim on anything. He just happened to draw pictures like the Federal Reserve was drawing pictures. They just looked alike. How could there be a crime involved? Interesting, huh? Now, let's take a look at another little thing. Illustration two. There's a thing called a pawn shop. I hope you understand what a pawn shop is. It is a bank. It's a poor man's bank. When you go down to buy with that bank, the interest rate is high. Why? The cost of making a loan is the same. The time involved and everything else, regardless whether you loan $100,000, you're loaning $25. If you're loaning $25 and the guy makes 10 loans a day, he's got to earn enough of the 10 loans to live on, doesn't he? So, relative to the $25, the cost is high. But actually, the pawn shop earns less per loan than a bank earns, right? So a lot of people think the pawn shop is bad because their interest rate is high. No, that's just because the loans are small. The smaller the loan, the higher the interest rate's got to be to cover the cost of making a loan. Well, what is a pawn shop? A pawn shop's a poor man's bank. He goes in, he puts up his coat, his collateral, or his watch, right? And he gets $25 he needs. Why does a pawnbroker want his coat or watch? Very simple. If he doesn't want to pay back, the pawnbroker's got to have a way of getting even. How does he get even? He sells the coat or watch, doesn't he? To get the money back if the guy doesn't come in and pay off the pawn. He doesn't pay what he promised to pay. Now, notice the Savings Loan Association loans you money on your house. They want a mortgage on your house. If you don't pay the payments, they're going to come and take your house, aren't they? Now, if you go down to borrow on your car to the finance company, they loan you money, make an agreement, right? But they want a chattel mortgage on your car, and you don't pay, they come with a tow rope and haul your car away. If you're a businessman and you want to borrow, you go down to the commercial bank and they loan you, but they want a little lien on your inventory, a little lien on your receivables, so they want some little way of getting the money back. Kind of funny, isn't it? Notice, if you're in the business of lending, you've got to have a way of collecting your money back, don't you? Or you're not in it very long. What would happen if you lent money on cars but said, I didn't want any chattel mortgage or anything else, and I wouldn't tow your car away if you didn't pay? How long do you think you'd be in the finance business? Well, about 5 weeks until all your money was gone, and then that'd be the end of that. Now, notice something else. The finance company does not want to tow your car away. The savings loan company doesn't want to foreclose in your house. They will if they have to. Why? Because if they don't, no one's going to pay. But they don't want to foreclose. They want you to pay. They want you to pay, as you promised. They're not in the business of foreclosing. Let's notice something else. The Savings and Loan Association, nor the finance company, or any of them, ever really wants you to pay back. As soon as you pay back for your car, what do they want to do? They want to lend you on another car. Their job isn't to get their money back, but to keep you in debt to collect interest. That's what they're in business for. A bank doesn't lend money to a business that they think is going to pay back and not borrow anymore. They lend to a business they know is going to grow and need more and more money and become a better and better customer and borrow more and more money and pay more and more interest. That's what they're in the business for, not getting their money back, but keeping it out working. Aren't they? Okay? Now, if there is a borrower, there is a lender. And if there's a lender, there's a borrower. If we find anybody borrowing, then somebody is lending. Okay? I mean, it has to be. Simple. Can't beat that. If governments borrow, there must be somebody who lends to governments. Some people would call the people who lend to governments international financiers or other sorts of names, international bank, all sorts of names for it. But there's somebody who lends to governments. These people are leaving for choir practice here. And what do I mean by lending to governments? We are told by our schools that we owe the national debt to ourselves. Don't we? But do we? Does everybody in the United States own $2,000 worth of bonds? You'd have to if we owe it to ourselves. Now, if somebody has $4,000 worth of bonds and somebody else has none, then the one who has none owes $2,000 to the one who has $4,000. Let's get that clear. Now, some people own way more than $2,000 worth of bonds, and most people own way less than $2,000 worth of government, federal government bonds. Don't talk about federal, not state, local, and everything else. We don't owe it to ourselves. We owe it to somebody else. Let's make that clear. Unless you happen to have a big pile of government bonds. Now, how do we... Let's get to something else. If you loan to a government, if you loan to a king, and one of the oldest games of kings is lending or spending more money than they take in taxes, they first clip the coin of the realm. That's the first game they go into, and after the coins only float and they no longer clink anymore, then they start printing paper money. But that starts inflating. They find that they have to finance their little game by another little thing. It's called debt, borrowing. Now, if they could borrow from their people, they would have already taxed it. If you're going to borrow to finance government, you've got to borrow from somebody who's got enough money to finance government. The problem with a person who lends to government is, how do you collect? How do you foreclose if he doesn't pay? You go into the king and say, King, you didn't pay me. I want my money. I demand my money. The king might say, off at your head. Now, that's kind of a dangerous way to lend, isn't it? Simple economics. So what are you going to do? You've got to have a way of towing away his kingdom if he doesn't pay. Now, how do you tow away a car? With another car. How do you tow away a kingdom? With another kingdom. Now, that's simple. We call it, in ordinary, everyday language, war. That's kingdom towing. All right? Now, I can't lend to one kingdom without lending to the kingdom's enemy. I got to make sure the two kingdoms are enemies of each other and about equal size and strength, so that my lending makes a difference of who wins in case of conflict. And so the King A knows that King B can whomp him if I'm King B. And King B knows that King A and I can whomp him. So now I have the power over both King A and King B. If I don't have the power over both King A and King B, I'm not in the finance business. Because if I can't tow the car away, I'm out of business. Let's make it clear.
Once again, this has been a recording of Dr. Stuart Crane's 1971 lecture titled Wheat Receipts, an examination of the International Monetary Fund and the history of international banking. Part 2 of this lecture focuses more closely on the history of international banking and some of the key players who have taken part in its formation. Interesting times may be found on the web by visiting http://www.xmail.net/interestingtimes/.